me to tell you about Unceded Airways?
What's that?
Isn't that some kind of indigenous radio show?
It sure is. Tell me, are you down for decolonization? Yeah. What?
I certainly wish I could hear about indigenous issues, people, and events on the radio.
You're in luck, because Unceded Airwaves talks about all these things and more every Monday morning at 11.
Music from indigenous artists and coverage of all the hot happenings in indigenous art and entertainment.
On CITR 101.9 FM.
Oh, wow. And they broadcast all this from the traditional, ancestral, and unceded territory of the Musqueam people?
Find out for yourself. Mm-hmm. Monday mornings at 11. Yeah. Or find episodes online at citr.ca.
Today we're joined in the studio by the Cedar Program Youth.
Where you're at.
Tonight, we take pleasure in bringing you Suspense, a weekly anthology of notable melodramas from stage and screen, fiction and radio, presented each week to bring you to the edge of your chair, to keep you in suspense.
Is one tired-looking bunch of men on that train.
Yeah, the 3-1 Express. On time to the minute, too. It's the last, you know, the last train until nearly dawn. 3-1 Express just passed. Be on the alert.
Got it. How?
So, this is the station control room. Switches and coils, charts and graphs, and that great blackboard with the lights... Very impressive, Professor Craig.
Indeed. But it's not Professor Craig anymore.
But you and my father were colleagues at the Natural History Museum.
That was another lifetime ago, Catherine. Now I'm Inspector Gordon Craig of the New York City Police Department.
But...
Just part of our little subterfuge down here. All will become clear soon enough. Now... About that board. A new wrinkle, that.
These dotted lines. 49th Street, 52nd Street, 58th Street.
It's not just a lighted chart. It actually records. Invisible lights, the sort of things that open speakeasy doors and rich men's garages. Pairs of them spaced every 25 yards along 5 miles of subway tunnel. Lord, I don't dare think what it cost to install. Yet, the city passed the appropriation for them without a murmur, even though the city was almost broke at the time. It was one of the last things Mayor Walker put up before his resignation.
Do you mean to say that this business goes that far back? Walker was the mayor when I was in pigtails.
Walker hadn't even served his first term when this thing started. It goes back to World War days, and even before that. The wreck of the subway train, I recall, passed as a German spy plot to keep us from going in with the Allies. The newspapers howled bloody murder, and we let 'em howl. Why not? America was as good as in the war anyhow by then. And if we'd told the people of New York City what really wrecked that subway train, well, they'd go mad if they knew what was down here, far below. 68th Street, 72nd, 78th.
Yes, about that crash...
Sometimes I wonder why we don't go mad down here. We who do know and have to face the horror down here night after night, year after year.
The horror of what?
The horror of them.
Them? What are they?
You will find out soon enough. Just remember that what you see and hear down here is the biggest secret in New York, certainly the most hideous. Your father is an old friend, and I do hope you'll get some good material for your short stories from this experience. But you'll have to change the facts enough so that no one will connect them with us. Agreed?
Of course, sir. I'll be happy to let you check anything that I write, so you're certain that the true facts of all of this will remain unknown to the general public.
Oh, that would be fine, Catherine. Thank you.
92nd Street, 98th, 101st.
Beyond 120th Street, things are pretty safe. When the train reaches that point, you'll see a green light flash. All clear. Though that doesn't mean absolute safety, you understand. It's just what we, after some number of years, established as the farthest reaches of their activities. They may extend them at any time, although so far they haven't done so.
Why do you think they haven't so far?
Not certain. Perhaps because it's lower than the other tunnels, chiseled far down into the basic bedrock of Manhattan, and so near to the East River you can almost hear the water lapping on quiet nights. Or maybe it's just the awful darkness of the tunnel here, the fungoid moisture and miasmic darkness that suits them. In any event, we've got the lights and the patrol cars and three-way stations like this one, each with 10 men on constant duty from dark till dawn.
30 men? Huh. Seems like a lot.
Yes. It's quite a little army I command down here in the night watches. An army of the unburied dead, you might say.
Well, it's a rather dramatic way of putting it.
But more accurate than I would like, nonetheless. I've actually had one of my men go mad, you know.
What?
2 others had to be placed in sanitariums for a while. But they got over it and are serving here still. But this fellow, well, we had to machine gun him down like a dog, finally. Or he'd have got one of us.
Good Lord! You killed one of your own men?
That was before we got the dark lights placed, you see. And he was able to hide out in the tunnels for days. We'd hear him howl sometimes as we patrolled, and see his eyes shining just as their eyes do in the darkness. So we knew that he was quite gone. So when we finally ran him down, we killed him. No bones made about it.
But how could you do that to one of your own?
Oh, it was simple enough. P-p-p-p-p-p. And that was the end. We buried him down here, too. And now the trains run over him as he lies. It was all by the book. Only we just couldn't take the poor fellow above ground and run the risk of people seeing him before interment.
Why? Because of the bullet wounds?
No, it was something else. You see, there were certain alterations. I don't want to dwell on it, but his face, it had changed. And there were other details, things I only found out when I dissected his body.
Like what?
I'd rather not go into them, if you don't mind. The whole point is, we have to be rather careful down here, all of us in the special detail. That's why we have such unusual working conditions. We wear police uniforms, but we aren't subject to ordinary police discipline. Many of us aren't even policemen. As you know, I was a professor, the museum's leading authority on apes.
Yes, I've read your findings from Carl Akeley's first African expedition. Remarkable. But how did you get involved in this?
It was soon after the Akeley expedition that they brought the thing to me for examination, after that first big wreck in the subway that had only been open less than a year. They'd found the thing pinned in the wreckage, screaming in agony from the lights on its dead white eyeballs. In fact, it seemed to have died from the lights rather than from its injuries.
What was the thing?
Well, it wasn't long before I determined that the thing wasn't an ape. There was vaguely anthropoid structure, and the blood corpuscles were almost human, quite shockingly so. But the head, the spade-like appendages, and the muscular development were quite unlike any beast or man on this earth. Indeed, the thing had never been on this earth. It would have died above ground in half a minute, just like an angleworm in the sun.
It sounds absolutely horrifying.
You have no idea. By the time I was finished, I was half afraid to even file my report. After all, even a fellow scientist would have found it a bit difficult to reconcile my classification of some sort of giant carrion-feeding subterranean mole with my ravings about canine and simian developments of members, and my absurd insistence on startlingly humanoid cranial development and brain convolutions indicating a degree of intelligence that... Well, there's no use going into all that now. I firmly expected them to order me up before a sanity commission. Instead, they offered me a position as head of the special subway detail at a salary that, well, was, to say the least, fantastic.
It happened as simple as that?
I guess they felt they found their man, someone who fully understood the gravity of the situation.
So they accepted your findings completely?
They deduced much of the stuff for themselves without needing me to tell them. They had facts they deliberately withheld from me, not wanting to influence my report. For example, they knew that that train had been deliberately derailed. The mutilated track proved that beyond all doubt. The condition of the earth about the wrecked cars showed conclusively that extensive mining and sapping had taken place there. And while I had been analyzing stomach fluids and body tissue to try to find out what my subject fed upon, they'd been burying secretly and with most elaborate precautions the half-desiccated corpses of half a dozen men, women, and children who... Well, they hadn't died in the wreck.
You mean that...
God, what a hideous shambles that place must have been before the wrecking crews got there. Mercifully, there was total darkness. The poor devils who were merely injured never knew what charnel horrors were going on in the Stygian depths about them. A few of them gibbered afterwards about green eyes and claws that raked their faces. But, of course, all that was set down to delirium. Even one man, who had his arm chewed half off, never knew. Surgeons amputated the rest immediately and told him when he regained consciousness that he'd lost it in the wreck.
Hushing up something that big must have taken some doing.
It can be done if you've got a whole city administration behind you. No newspaper reporter was ever allowed to see the wreck. No federal investigation ever moved forward. And by the time the crews had cleaned out the smashed train and removed the last victim, the special subway detail had gone into action. It's been on duty ever since, for the last 25 years.
25 years ago, you wouldn't have had the invisible lights or any other modern devices.
Just lanterns and guns and hand cars to patrol the entire subway system.
Like Mrs. Partington trying to sweep back the sea.
Only worse. Just a handful of puny mortals against hell itself in the eternal darkness of these gloomy tunnels far below the city.
So what happened?
Well, there were no more major wrecks. At least none of that magnitude. Oh, there were still a few incidents that we could explain away as accidents. Lord knows we did everything we could think of to prevent them.
Like what?
Once we sank a shaft 50 feet deep in the earth at a spot where we'd seen strange disturbances beside the train tracks and heard stranger sounds. On another occasion, we blocked up both ends of the tunnel for a mile stretch and filled it with poison gas. We even tried dynamite and that... Well, why go on? It was all useless. Utterly useless. We just couldn't get to grips with anything tangible. Oh, we'd hear sounds sometimes on our long, dismal patrols in the darkness. Our little lanterns mere pinpricks of light in those vast concrete vaults. We'd catch glimpses of glinting eyes far off, find fresh earth piled up where only a moment before there'd been hard-packed cinders and gravel. Once in a while, we'd fire our guns at something whitish and half-seen, but there'd be only a tittering laugh in answer. A laugh as mirthless and savage as that of a hyena dying away in the earth. 1,000 times I was tempted to chuck the whole thing, to get back above ground to sunshine and sanity, and forget the horrors of this mad world far underneath.
And yet here you are. So why did you stay?
I'd get to thinking of all those helpless men and women and children, riding the trains unsuspecting through the haunted dark, with evil out of the primeval dawn burrowing beneath them for their destruction. Well, I just couldn't go. I stayed and did my duty, same as the rest, year after year.
A strange career for a man of science, wouldn't you say?
Oh, to be sure. And yet, I flatter myself that it's been rather a socially useful career at that. Perhaps more so than stuffing animals for dusty museum cases or writing monstrous textbooks that no one ever bothers to read. For I've a science of my own down here. The science of keeping millions of dollars worth of subway tunnels swept clean of horror, and of safeguarding the lives of half the population of the world's largest city.
And then, too, you've doubtless had opportunities for research here, which most of your former colleagues would give their right arm for, the opportunity to study an absolutely unknown form of life.
Oh, true enough. Though perhaps only unknown to modern man. The things were known to the ancients. Even the Bible has reference to the ghouls that burrow in the earth. And to this day, the inhabitants of Persia, the Middle East, and parts of Russia hunt down tomb-dwelling creatures that steal the dead.
Is there any historical record of them here on Manhattan?
Yes, and you'd be surprised just how many records from Manhattan Island's earliest history, even before the Europeans settled here. Just ask the curator of the Aborigines Museum out on Riverside Drive about the burial customs of island Indians 1,000 years ago. Customs perfectly inexplicable, unless you take into consideration what they were guarding against.
I was there with my father once and remember seeing a peculiar skull, half human and half canine. And the ceremonial robes of Aboriginal shamans, they were traced with drawings of whitish, spidery things.
Yes, things burrowing through conventionalized tunnels and doing other unspeakable things. They're also mentioned in the writings of the early Dutch settlers, such as Jan van der Ees and Walter van Twiller. And have you ever read Washington Irving's 1809 work, A History of New York? Some mighty odd passages in that.
I know the passages of which you speak. They make mention of guard patrols kept for no rational purpose on the early streets at night, particularly in the region of cemeteries, and of forays in the lightless dark, flintlocks popping, graves hastily filled in before dawn.
In all of these writings, even with the worst played down, there's still enough nightmare in it to blast a man's soul if he lets himself think on what goes on down there, below the blessed sanity of the Earth's mercifully concealing crust. We figured out that they must have been pretty numerous once. No wonder the Indians sold this place so cheaply, eh? You'd sell your home cheaply, too, if it were overrun with monstrous vermin.
But they aren't so numerous now, I take it?
No. With civilization's coming, they were killed with fire and steel by men whose utter ruthlessness sprang from soul-shuddering detestation, who slew and kept silent about their slaying, lest their fellow men think them mad. Today, the remnant of the things are far underground, in charnel depths that... well, we daren't conjecture just where... but we think that there's some fault in the basic bedrock of the island, some monstrous cavern whose edge this lowest of all the subway tunnels taps, and which lets them through somehow into the tubes.
So they're largely contained, then?
Yes, though it took us a long time to fully realize that. At first, we were afraid they'd get over into Brooklyn and Queens, or even into the upper levels of the tunnels, and on to the deserted streets of Manhattan in the pre-dawn hours. So we had half the police department down here at one point, including the mounted force, though God knows what even a trained police horse would do if it ever came face to face with one of those things.
But you soon found that it was just a handful of tunnels that were dangerous.
And even those only in certain hours of the night. Don't ask me why they never come up in daylight. It's always night down here, hundreds of feet below the surface.
Maybe it's the constant passage of the trains. After all, they run every few minutes from sunrise until the Broadway theaters close for the night.
Probably. Only for about 4 hours of the night is there a lull, when long miles of tunnel are deserted and silent, when anything could come and go at will in them and not be seen. And so it's only during these hours that we really worry, you see. Not that we really worry now. They don't hunt us anymore. We hunt them. Kill or capture them as we will.
Capture? You mean you've had living specimens of the things?
Oh, yes. A half dozen times we've had a sort of mad Bronx zoo of our own down here. Though it would be more accurate to describe it as a living Madame Tussauds Chamber of Horrors. When we have an influential person who is especially skeptical, we take him to my laboratory, hand him a flashlight, and let him see for himself what is imprisoned there in total darkness. And then we stand by to catch him as he faints.
So you've trusted a lot of politicians and officials to see for themselves?
Why not? They couldn't possibly speak of the experience afterwards. They'd just be locked up as lunatics if they did. And it made them much more liberal with funds.
Do you have any of the things now?
No. We can't keep them around us for very long before we have to kill them.
Why? Is their appearance that repellent?
It's not that. It's not even what they eat. We have a plentiful supply of that from the city morgue. But There's a sort of cosmic horror the things exude that, well, it's quite beyond description. You simply can't breathe the same air with them, live together in the same sane world. In the end, we have to gun them down and throw them back underground to their friends and neighbors who lay in wait for them, ready to glut on their corpses just as they would on ours.
Still, you must have learned quite a lot from the specimens you had.
I have filled 2 volumes with notes for my successor, whoever he may be.
That sounds rather fatalistic.
The fight will always have to be carried on, I fear. There's no possibility of ever really wiping them out, you know. All we can do is hold our own.
That's not what I meant.
You know, when you're on furlough, walking sunlit streets among our fellow men, with blue sky above and clean air all about us, it's easy to forget, to think that all this foulness is just a bad dream. But then we remember. Remember what goes on down in the crepuscular earth. The mad, gnawing, eternal darkness.
When was the last time you were above ground?
The younger fellows go up pretty regularly, but as time goes on, they go above ground less and less. I can't even remember the last time I did.
But why?
Hello?
Breakthrough at 79th Street. Requesting units converge immediately.
Roger that.
Substation 3.
Dispatch unit to 79th Street Tunnel.
Roger that. Out.
Riot car number 1, proceed to 79th Street Tunnel. Breakthrough in progress.
Good heavens! What was that?
Riot car number 1. Our own version of the squad cars above ground. Just one of the little electric hand cars used in subway construction, but armed with machine guns and souped up by our engineers until it'll do nearly 80 miles an hour.
At that rate, it could traverse the entire sector in 5 minutes.
Another one just left Substation 3 up at 105th Street. They'll converge at the disturbance momentarily. Let's listen to them. Microphones every 100 feet along the tunnel. Another small fortune to install, but a great step forward in our efficiency. We always have someone listening all night long at the switchboard, and you'd be surprised by what he hears.
What?
Well, let's just say that we have to change operators pretty often. Ah, there we are. Microphone number 290. Approximately 1,000 feet below one of the busiest corners of Manhattan. Listen, hear that?
Oh, merciful heavens! Is that one of the things?
One, probably more, given the crunching of the gravel.
They seem unaware that we're listening.
They are! The things are also unaware that from both directions, death is sweeping down upon them on truckling wheels. They've heard one of the cars. They're fleeing madly along the tunnels now.
Now they've heard the second car. They must realize they're trapped. The things are trapped, aren't they?
They're trapped, all right. No time to dig. No time to burrow down into the earth like the vermin they are. No, you won't escape, you devils. We've got you. We've got you. Now the searchlights. Blazing searchlights trained on bodies accustomed to absolute darkness. Burning, searing them, withering them like actual blazing heat. And now our machine guns going into action. Lewis guns with suppressors on them so that the echoes won't carry to upper levels. Throwing slugs of lead into cringing white bodies and flattened white skulls. Shriek! Shriek, you beasts from hell! Shriek, you monsters from the charnel depths! See what good it does you! You're dead! Dead! Dead!
Good God.
What are you staring at, you blasted fool girl?
The look on your face. No wonder you keep it so dark in here. How did I not see it before? That lengthening of your jaw. That flattening of your forehead and cranium. No human head could be shaped like that.
Riot car number 3 reporting. Disturbance suppressed. 4 of the things in the bag.
Roger that. Commence standard cleanup.
Understood. Over and out.
I know. I've felt the change coming on me for a long time now. It's coming over all of us bit by bit, but on me the worst, for I've been here the longest. That's why I never go above ground anymore, even on leave. I wouldn't dare let anyone, even you, see my face in strong light.
But how?
25 years. 25 long, dragging years down here in hell itself. It was bound to leave a mark. I was prepared for that, but, oh, great powers above, if I'd for one instant dreamed what it would be...
Isn't there anything to be done?
Too late. Too late for any of us. And it's not just physical. I get cravings, sometimes. Down here in the night's loneliness.
You don't mean...
Yes. Charnel thoughts. Charnel desires that would sear your very soul if I were to but whisper them to you. And they'll get worse. Much worse. Until at last I run mad through the tunnels like that poor devil I told you about. Then... my men will shoot me down like a dog, as they already have orders to do so when the time comes. And yet, even though it horrifies me to the core, it interests me, for it shows how the things may have come about in the world's dim dawn, perhaps never quite human, perhaps closer length to the primeval beast, but that when driven underground into caves and then beneath them by man's coming, retrograded century by uncounted century down to the worm-haunted darkness. Just as we poor devils are retrograding down here from very contact with them, until at last none of us will ever be able again to walk above in the blessed sunlit air among our fellow men. The 415, express from the Bronx, safe and sound, its occupants all unsuspecting of how they were safeguarded.
But at what cost? At what an awful cost!
It's nearly dawn in the city overhead. Rays of the rising sun are gilding the white skyscrapers of Manhattan. A great city begins to wake to morning life. There's never a dawn for us poor, damned souls. Down here in the eternal dark. Far, far below. So ends Far Below by John C. Alzadek and Dana Perry Hayes. Tonight's story of Suspense. Suspense is produced by Blue Hours Productions and recorded at Melrose Music in Hollywood, California. Tonight's radio drama was adapted for radio by John C. Alzadek and Dana Perry Hayes from the short story by Robert Barber Johnson. Damon Crawl was Inspector Gordon Craig. Catherine Kamei was Catherine. Steve Moulton was Policeman Number 1. Sean Hackman was Policeman Number 2. And John Lauver was Policeman Number 3. I'm Damon Crawl. Next week at this time, tune in again for another study in suspense.
eyes. The last Sunday of every month from 11 to 5. Won't you hear with me?
We don't need to tell you that Vancouver has a housing problem.
Mass evictions.
Mass rent evictions.
Unfair rent increases.
What happened to rent control and protection from unfair eviction?
If these or other housing matters concern you, you may be interested in joining the Vancouver Tenants Union. For more information, visit tenantsunion.ca.
Ionized Yeast presents Lights Out. Everybody.
It is later than you think.
Lights Out brings you stories of the supernatural and the supernormal, dramatizing the fantasies and the mysteries of the unknown. We tell you this frankly. So if you wish to avoid the excitement and tension of these imaginative plays, we urge you, calmly but sincerely, to turn off your radio now.
My name, Arch Obler. Tonight, a story I enjoyed writing for you because, well, frightening as the thought may be, it could happen.
Furthermore, I might speak frankly, my dear Diane. The basic thing wrong with woman is her nose. Let's cut it off.
Russell Adams.
Then there's the matter of her ears. Look at them.
Well?
They're too obvious. Cut them off, too.
No nose, no ears. A fine art critic you turn out to be.
Oh, is this thing odd?
Russ Adams, I hate you. I think it's the best piece of sculpture I've ever done.
Egomaniac.
Oh, will you go away?
Not until I tell my wife how much I adore her. How about stopping the artistic endeavors for the night and romancing with the old man?
Any night.
Come on. Out on the veranda. There's a moon.
Spoken as Professor Russell J. Adams, instructor of astronomy at our beloved university.
I don't know a single scientific fact about this moon. It's a special satellite built entirely for romance.
Then it's a date.
After you, fair Diane? Why do you laugh?
Just thinking, it's a good thing we haven't any neighbors, or they'd think we were honeymooning.
10 years and 2 more weeks.
Sweet.
Why?
For remembering.
Where the sign?
Oh, it's such a lovely night.
Yes. You're very lovely with the moonlight in your hair.
Darling.
335 days out of the year, moonlight to me is just a reflected light of the sun. A light interesting only that it may be analyzed spectroscopically. But these 30 days of our vacation, Diane. Oh, what a magical change. It's a soft lover's moon hanging in the heavens only to brighten your loveliness.
Oh, and people wonder why I can't get excited about Ronald Coleman.
Coleman? Who's he?
Spoken like a true professor. He's a motion picture star. An absolute paragon of romance.
Oh, well, perhaps I shouldn't neglect my movie going. Oh, so much I mean, with such paragons to teach one.
You do all right. Oh, Russell.
What's the matter?
I saw the brightest shooting star.
Is that all? The way you gasp, I thought you saw the angel of death himself galloping over those meadows.
There's another one. Look, Russell.
My dear, for 11 months out of the year, the heavens have my full and undivided attention. Oh, but during this blessed month, let the heavens fall. I can't be bothered.
I never saw such bright shooting stars.
Yes, and another thing, my dear. As the wife of an accredited professor of astronomy, I think it no more than fitting that you give the phenomena that you observed its proper name, namely the fall of a meteor.
There's another one. And another. Oh, Russ, how bright and beautiful.
They travel at such a tremendous rate, the friction of our atmosphere burns them into a fiery vapor.
There's more of them. Look. One after the other. I've never seen so many shooting stars.
Uh-uh.
I mean so many meteors in all my life. Oh, so that's why you wanted me out here. You knew about this meteor shower, didn't you?
It's one of heaven's free spectacles in this constellation. Every 3 years, and this happens to be the third year.
How frightening.
Quite frightening.
Those great masses of stone and iron coming from who knows where in interstellar space, traveling millions and millions of miles, and then going up in such glorious flame just as they reach the end of their journey.
Not all goes to flame. Hundreds of them strike the earth each year.
Well, Russell, there's no danger.
Oh, no. The probabilities of being struck on the head by that cosmic rubbish is about 1,000 times more remote than winning a sweepstake without buying a ticket.
Well, look. That one. The brightest of all.
Wait, Diane. What's that?
I don't know. Something from
look
the
up.
Sky. It's shooting star.
Look out, Diane.
Right.
All right, dear. Everything's all right.
What? How?
A meteor. Must have landed out in the field there. Here, let me help you. You all right, dearest?
Yes, I'm all right. Russ, where are you going?
Out there, where it must have buried itself. Wait here, I'll be right back.
No, no, I'm going with you.
All right, if you want to. Oh, Diane, what an experience we've had. The one chance in a million I spoke about almost occurred to us.
But, Russ, was it really a shooting star? That explosion like a bombshell?
A bombshell of the universe.
What will we find out there?
A fragment of the meteorite,
I hope.
But
it'll burn.
No, no. All of its heat will have been dissipated. Then again, it may have exploded into 1,000 minute pieces. I pray to heaven that it hasn't.
I'm afraid.
No, no. The danger's all over. Here. The moon's so bright. If any of the mass landed, I should be able to find the torn ground where it smashed through the turf.
Oh, please, darling, let's wait until morning.
No, I must find the thing at once. The moon gives plenty of light. From the brightness to the flash, I'm positive that the meteor landed someplace right in here. I'll tell you... Look!
What?
The turf, all torn up. This is the place.
Russell, are you mad? Get up off the ground.
Right here. It must have struck a glancing blow off the brow of the ridge. I've got it.
What?
A fragment of it. Still warm. See? No larger than a baseball. All that was left of it.
That's a meteor?
A meteor, right. All that's left of the meteor that burned and exploded. What a find.
Drop it, Russ.
What are you talking
Throw
about?
It away.
Hey, come back to the house.
What are you going to do with it?
Jane, what's the matter with you? Your face.
I don't know. Somehow I'm afraid for all of us.
Afraid? Good heavens, my dear, there's nothing dangerous about this. A mass metal that's 90% iron. Why, it's as harmless as any inert piece of metal. Come to the study. I'll show you where the rush of air against the incandescent...
Russ, wait.
Huh?
Someone's crying.
Yes.
I'll go and see. It's Helga. Oh, Helga. You poor thing. We forgot all about you.
Oh, Mrs. Adams, it was exploding.
Now. Everything's all right, Helga.
What's going on, Diane?
Oh, poor Helga. The explosion frightened her out of her wit.
Oh, Mr. Professor Adams, we die. We all die.
Don't be a
the
fool.
The fire, it come from the sky. It kill us. It kill you and me and everybody. We die. Everybody
stop it.
Die.
Stop it. For heaven's sake, stop that. Take care of her, Diane. Give her a positive or something.
All right, Russell. All right now, Helga. Everything's all right.
I'm going to get at this meteorite, so please quiet the dumb fool down as quickly as you can. Superstitious idiot. Simple phenomenon, and she thinks the world's ending. Simple little meteorite. Iron, a bit of nickel content. Nothing particularly unusual. Oh, Diane, quiet her down, will you?
Yes. She'll be all right.
You look a little rocky yourself. Here, sit here.
She's very frightened.
Yeah, and even you, Diane.
Well?
You've acted so strangely, as if this inert piece of cosmic metal could cause some supernatural ability.
What are you going to do with it?
Nothing. Examine it. Here, I'll take some of this nitric acid. Where's that bottle? Yeah. Now watch closely, and I'll show you that the stone consists of ordinary elements. Iron.
Russell.
What?
This mark on it. How strange.
Funny, I hadn't noticed it before.
Circles the entire stone.
I wouldn't be a bit surprised that a blow right here would break it in half. Yes, I think I'll try to do that.
No, Russ. Leave it alone.
Good heavens, Diane. Nothing but a stone. All I'm going to do is try and break it along this fissure. You had a hammer, girl. Ah, here. What if the stone break? Almost solid metal. I'll try. By George, it did. Clean in half. What?
Look. What's inside?
Flesh.
Oh, Rathau.
Negative ray protoplasmic. No, it can't be. It can't. This is a meteor. It came from out there. There is no flesh. Nothing could live.
Russ, look.
Huh?
It's growing.
Growing?
Ladies and gentlemen, a shooting star flashes out of the sky and falls to Earth. And in it, something living from out of interstellar space. Yes. If this is the time to take a breath before going on with tonight's lights-out play, the story of Professor Adams and his wife and the thing from out beyond our world, a meteorite had fallen, and Professor Adams had broken it open, and there was a gray nugget of flesh inside, which, even as the professor and his wife stood watching, began to grow.
Faster and faster. Gray flesh. Growing. Russ, I'm afraid.
No, Di, no. Wait, control yourself. This is something we've got to see, both of us, calmly, so we can tell others clearly what we saw.
I'll try. Russ, keep your arm around me.
Larger and larger. Listen, the noise as it grows.
I hear it. When will it stop? When?
Look. Look.
I can't. That horrible gray flesh.
But you must see it. Look. It's forming into something.
What?
A head. It's forming into a head.
Oh!
How can it be, Diane? Flesh in a meteor growing. Growing into a head.
I see it. A head. Horrible head.
Diane, you heard.
Yes.
A head without body speaking.
Yes, speaking.
Russell.
You hear and understand me?
Sickness. Laughing.
I laugh at the fear and wonder in your simple little faces.
Who are you? What are you?
If I told you, would your little earth minds understand?
Tell us, whatever you are. Tell us what you are.
What you on earth will soon have for masters.
No, 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 wait, Diane. I must know. You thing... What can I call you? Tell me what you mean, you... Masters.
Surely you, simple little men, do not think that in you creation has reached the ultimate.
No. Gray flesh talking. I'm getting out.
You will stay.
Russ, I can't move.
Nor I.
You cannot move.
Who are you? Tell us, who are you?
You saw how I came.
A tiny bit of protoplasm in that meteorite?
So I willed myself to be, to reach your earth.
You came here in that? Through space?
Through space beyond your furthest conception, earth thing. Many of my people have tried. I am the first to succeed.
Then meteors are
the means we have used to try and reach this haven of plenty. I am the first. Now there will be others.
No.
You're from another planet?
An old world. Old beyond your understanding, a world grown cold in its age, empty with passing years. We must escape to a young, fertile world. this world.
But you're only heads without bodies.
Oh, Russ, I'm so afraid.
No, please. I must hear him speak. This that is happening to us is a miracle of all times. Tell me, you there, are you only heads in that world you speak of?
Heads. You see what I will you to see.
But what are you?
A mind and a will beyond your feeble understanding. As far above you as you are above the apes that still must crawl in your jungle.
But how can it be that you speak as I speak and understand what I say?
Your prattling wearies me. But I tell you this. All that you say, I know. The most profound thought any of you earth things have ever thought is to me as the babbling of children. But now I am hungry. You understand that little thing.
Hungry?
Hungry?
Hungry with a hunger that has driven me over space without ending. Hunger that has brought me here.
But what do you eat?
You will know.
What do you mean?
What food could there be here to fill the hunger of such as I? Hunger that would make me entomb myself in metal, flung into space in a hope that chance would bring me through the fire of that air of yours. What food?
I don't know. Tell me.
Come closer, thing.
Oh, no.
And why, oh, no, thing?
You don't... Human?
Human. You think you crawling worms are human to us.
But if you're man...
But we are not man. You are the cattle, and we are the keepers.
Oh.
You raise the cattle for life, and we for centuries have raised such as you on our world for life. But now, as I told you, our world has grown too old and too cold. The herds of you die, and we grow hungry. That is why I am here. We need new cattle. Here there are so many of you. Earth woman.
Russell, it spoke to me.
We've got to get out of here.
Woman.
No. Stop it. Don't look at me. Stop it.
Come closer.
No. Don't listen to him, Diane.
Closer.
No. Don't move, Diane. Stay where you are. Stay right there.
You hear only me, Earth woman.
Only you.
No, Diane. No. Don't say that. Don't look at that monster, Diane.
Closer, Diane.
Yes.
No.
Closer.
No, Diane. Stand still. Don't move toward it. Don't.
Closer,
No.
Diane.
Closer.
Monster. Not Diane. Diane, I beg of you. Don't go closer to it.
Closer.
No.
Closer.
No. I'll kill you.
No.
I can only get to you.
Soon you will move to me as she is. Closer.
Diane.
Closer.
If I could move.
Closer.
Diane.
Closer.
I've got
to find the way.
Lord.
The strength to stop him. Diane, you're almost...
Closer.
That bottle. Magic acid.
Closer.
The bottle.
Closer.
Yes.
Close
yes. Close to you, monster. Closer. Take this. Flesh. Flesh. That's all. Diane, wake up. Open your eyes. I've killed the thing. I killed it.
Oh,
Diane, it's all right.
Russell.
I've killed it.
Oh.
Diane, look. Outside, it's still dark. Yes, the sky's still streaked with the Russian meteorites. And that thing said more of the monsters of his breed are trying to reach this earth to feel that devil's hunger in them. Another meteorite is just there. And in it, perhaps... Oh, Diane. Diane. Is that truly to be end for mankind?
Mr. Obler, will the end of the world come that way?
Well, Frank, if you mean will the end for mankind come out of interstellar space in the form of a flying meteor, well, there are some mighty interesting theories along that line. The amazing thing about it, Frank, is that there are so many logical and thoroughly possible ways in which the entire tribe of mankind could be wiped off the earth at any moment. I'm not talking about famine or what's close to all of us, war. I mean other ways. A star moves into our darkness from somewhere out there in the blackness of interstellar space, and the pull of its presence might turn our spinning globe headlong into the sun. In a split second, all of mankind, all his buildings, wonderful possessions, his precious little pile, would go up in a flash of fire. Or out of the sun itself, the very source of our life, as we all know, could shoot a long stream of explosive flame that would curl around us and again, well, so quickly that no man would know what had happened. In split seconds, this earth would be a charred, uninhabited spheroid. Yes, when one stops to think what a tiny little grain of sand this haughty world of ours actually is in the dark sea of space, and when we realize how precarious little mankind's hold is on this earth, the spectacle of man's inhumanity to man becomes a cosmic joke.
Well, all of those things are certainly interesting to think about, Mr. Ober, but tell us now, what's going to happen next week?
Next week, Vals Triste. No, that's not a dance. It's a story of chance. That unpredictable chance that makes one man a saint and the next man a Hitler. The flip of a coin, the turn of a card, the bend of a road. I think you'll like what we have to offer you, but as usual, next week.
Lights Out will come to you again next Tuesday at this same time. Be sure to listen to Arch Obler's weird story of Vals Triste.
He's a nasty, nasty guy. He's a liar.
Get him out of here. Get him the hell out of here. Get him out of here.
Who is this guy? Does he have a name? Does anybody know where he's from?
They call me
DJ Ray.
Late Night Show is the start of the weekend. Tune in Friday nights at 11 p.m. till late here on CITR 101.9 FM. If you're a producer or a DJ or an MC or any of those things and you love drum and bass or ambient sounds, please email me. My email address is CITRLateNightShow@gmail.com.
This concludes our proposal. Thank you for your attention.
And that's all the time we have for Scald's Hall. Coming up in a moment, we'll have Canada Post Rock with John. So from all of us here, please have a safe and happy weekend.